For over a century, people have made machines that make music. To make those machines make music, they've needed a programming track, some way to indicate what instruments do what when. The method is very strange to get used to, but for a certain kind of mind, it's absolutely exhilarating, and it encourages them, inspires them even, to make music. I got wrapped up in one of those waves in my 20s, and for a short time, I was a music tracker. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, William Hearn, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Where to even start with music tracking? The weird way to do it, which I think I'll choose, is to think of the music that plays inside of a carousel, that calliope music that has all sorts of instruments and is obviously not a live band, even though the instruments are playing for you. The instructions on which instruments to play when come on some sort of medium, usually a belt with different holes in it, that goes through a set of gears and tells the machine what to do. For most people, the idea of a piano roll is probably best to work with. Think of that rolling pin with paper on it that has thousands of notches on it, and as it goes through the machine, different keys are played on the piano. It was pretty trivial for them to add other instruments, like cymbals and drums and marimbas, and add percussion layers and accents to whatever the piano was playing. The more complicated, the better for these machines. It was no difference at all for a machine to hit 16 notes at once as opposed to one. So people like Scott Joplin could create compositions that were both complicated and breathtaking and yet playable, perfect, by these machines. Over and over through the century, somebody will create some sort of music-making technology, and buried deep within it is a piano roll, a set of notches in a piece of paper, whether it's digital or analog, and it's telling a machine to make music. In 1988, I was lent an Amiga, and there were a whole set of programs for the Amiga that simply blew me away. The name for them were demos. They would fill up an entire disc, and besides having graphics and animation and beautiful programming effects, they would also have long, complicated music pieces that seemed to go on forever. I didn't understand how this magic was being done for quite some time. Eventually, I learned that there was a technology in there, not created first with the Amiga. It was something called a tracker. Like any discipline that can take a lifetime, a tracker is simple when you first look at it. It's a series of columns of numbers. Sometimes it's 4, sometimes 8, 32, 64. Each of those columns of numbers will have a note and then some sort of additional programming, whether it's a hexadecimal number or a few letters, and it tells another program, a player, what to do. If this file is using internal system noises, then it will just play those system noises according to those columns of numbers. In many cases, however, the file itself will have sound waves that those columns of numbers are indicating should be played over and over. I hope I haven't lost you here. Think of it, if you want, like a spreadsheet, and after the spreadsheet are anywhere between 5 and 20 small sound files, maybe a drum or a note or a voice. Those columns of numbers indicate what those sound waves, those samples, should be played as, over and over. A repeating set of numbers in one column say that the bass drum sound should come at a regular interval. The second column tells you that a bunch of notes going up and down are played by a flute. Maybe the third one has a sine wave that is being moved up and down to provide a kind of voice part that rides over the other two. Maybe the fourth column is a bass that floats around at the lower depths. Maybe it's even using the same sine wave sample, going at a much slower rate. The result, in some cases, is truly, truly magical. I have the strongest memory of one of these tracker configuration files included a song that went on for 9 minutes, and in total, including sound waves and the sound file and the programming, was 253K. Even at a time when the magic of how small a file could be for the amount of effect it had was commonplace, this blew me away. This song had everything. A piano part with an incredible guitar solo, different sequences at different tempos crashing into each other. It went on and on and on, and it was focused for a demo. In other words, it was not just a piece of music, but a synchronized soundtrack for a video production that it would play with. It was inspiring to me in every sense of the word. At that moment, that juncture of being blown away by a creative work, you become one of two people. Somebody who wants to listen and enjoy so many more of them, or somebody who wants to become the person who makes more. It wasn't very long before I became that second person. You will not be surprised to hear that there were a whole bunch of tracker programs created over the years, and that the people who would adhere to one had nothing but ire for the folks who used the others, that there were rivalries and opinions, very strong opinions, over which program was best. Each one had a set of channels that you worked in, and then sound files you could load in from different formats. They then had that extra column for each note that let you change how the note went. You could add vibrato, you could tell it to slide, you could cut up the sample and start at a different part, or even play it backwards. From these basic building blocks rose empires of sound creation. Musicians who called themselves trackers, who both worked with the demo scene and created music on their own. The music they made was, to me, breathtaking. Talent is talent. If a person could take a handful of samples and modify it and make them interact in ways that nobody would understand until they looked at the programming, that was a valid musician making valid pieces for a valid audience. Sitting on the Internet Archive in the emulation section are music discs, discs whose entire purpose was to take anywhere between a handful or a huge amount of music pieces written in trackers and play them for an audience under a theme. Maybe it was just what was made this month. Maybe it was about a holiday. Maybe it was just to make fun of some other group. But these music discs, just 100K or more, could have 30 minutes of music on them. Beautiful 8-bit creations that could sound like full professional productions. There were cracking groups, there were ANSI art groups, there were demo groups, and there absolutely were music groups. People who created music on a regular basis, put it into a release or a music disc, and then sent it out over BBSs and then later the internet for everyone to enjoy. You expected them. You expected new releases. You looked forward to them. They would collaborate with graphics artists to give each of these music discs a different brand. They were something that you downloaded. You looked forward to downloading and playing them while programming and tinkering into the night. I don't mean to build up to my music career in this. I was not great. My handle at the time for music was Sketch the Cow. And I worked in a program called Fast Tracker 2, which was created by a set of Swedes and was a particularly well-written user interface for writing trackers. I just took to this program. I thought it was just amazing to work with. I thought it was perfection for what I needed. Its user interface, besides being smooth and fast, was intuitive and fun. adding things. You could go into a mode where stuff was being constantly repeated. You could see where you were making mistakes. It encouraged you to experiment and stack pieces of music by measures over other measures and then seeing what worked better. You could then take that set of notes and refer to it, so you could have the first set of notes, the second set of notes, go back to the first, play half of the second, and then go to a third. You could do, in other words, with enough concentration, really complicated and really involved music pieces, and hear them immediately. Because you could use pretty good samples, but only use one of each to get the sounds you wanted, you could make your mods incredibly small or incredibly large for what you needed. This was a program that was always on one of my computers in Harvard Square, and when I was doing caricatures in a cow suit, I would go home and work as Sketch the Cow on my little music tracks. I created something like a dozen pieces over the years, and I uploaded them, like everybody else did, to ftp.cdrom.com, because that's where they would rate your music and describe if you had done it right or what they thought of it. I frankly don't know who was writing those reviews, but I did look forward to them. I never got a really high review. Describing where the inspiration came for these songs, I just would play around with samples and they would speak to me. I would do experiments with pressing random keys or trying to go up and down in different scales and then seeing what jumped out at me. I loved making complicated percussion. I loved involving everything. I loved creating environments based on these samples and then putting music over it. In a few rare cases, I would find a piece of music already out there written by somebody else, and I would remix it, add different parts to it, or slow it down and speed it up, just to keep myself near what I considered to be real talent. I would download some tracks from the internet, and I would just stare at the programming, trying to figure out how they were doing this. They would change the tempo between notes to give a kind of weight to the percussion that I couldn't quite understand, but it sounded beautiful. I would watch them have two different tracks of the same piece modulated slightly to give it a real sense of depth that I couldn't quite put my finger on, but which really added to the whole experience. There were people, in other words, working at a whole other galactic level of music that I, stumbling around in the darkness, was never going to reach. Those pieces I wrote by Sketch the Cow are out there. They're in different compilations, on archives of FTP sites. They're even on a shareware CD or two, scooped up by these people who were looking for new content. I don't think they give much insight into my personality, but it's fun to know that this music that I wrote probably reached hundreds, maybe thousands of people over the years, just listening to different music and trying it out. I can't quite put my finger on why I got out of it, why I got out of both composing that sort of music or really composing any music at all. My easy go-to is to say that the documentaries took all that over, the keeping track of hundreds of interviews, of moving around the country, of trying to come up with a coherent story on a video editor. That fulfilled the same feeling. A non-linear video editor, after all, is just another tracker. Maybe that took it over. Maybe that level of intense work finally put to rest my need to write pieces of music in a weird little program that was like a spreadsheet with a bunch of music files. Not sure. But I am happy about one thing. Playing Fast Tracker 2 files is not 100% easy. Some modern media players will do it, but it's not very intuitive. So somewhere in the 2000s, I ended up converting them all to MP3, putting them up on my cow.net website, and making them available, along with my thoughts on why those songs came to be. I did that around 2001, 2002, and I am so glad I did. It doesn't come up that often, but every once in a while, if I really want to, I can go back and listen to these musical works. Who I was then and who I am now, completely different people. but it makes the songs kind of special. They're these fun little bursts of creativity that a 20-something was doing while learning about going from 56K modems to the internet, learning about writing HTML and creating a website, playing games like Quake and going to LAN parties and connecting to weird terminals on some sort of web browser, and watching the web browser become the most amazing of all of the applications. In other words, they were a beautiful soundtrack for a world that I kind of miss. This is Jason Scott, Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bekoyanu, Forrest Fuqua, Mark Pilgrim, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. I don't know if I'm 100% ready to talk about the North American International Demo Party experience I had in Montreal in 1996, but I will say that among the many events that happened there was a real-time speed music competition that I foolishly thought I could enter. At the time I'd written a dozen pieces, I thought that I was up there and that I could write really great stuff. And the way that the competition worked was that along some tables were a bunch of computers with a tracker on them. The people running the contest would give you 8 different samples, and you had to compose a song in about 10 minutes. What I remember was that I decided to go for it. Cockily thought, absolutely thought I would place. I wouldn't win, of course, but I'd place. And I sat down and started to run through the samples. One of them was a horrifying static. Another was a buzz. Another was a single beep. And the others were equally terrible. And the rule said that you had to use every one of the samples at some point in the song. All I remember of that time was how I realized I was completely and utterly out of my league. You know, you hit a moment when you're playing in a contest that you realize that you were not prepared for this contest, that you were going to Mount Everest with a candy bar and a wish, and everybody around you is going to compete, but you shouldn't be there. You are in some way committing a crime by taking a seat away from a competent person. And I had that moment. That humbling moment when I realized that the way that I composed my songs slowly over weeks, trying to knock off the rough edges and slowly assemble some good ideas and randomly experiment, was not designed for a contest like this. I wasn't ready for this at all. It was in many ways utterly humbling, but it's happened a couple of times in my life, and in the aggregate, looking back, every one of them has been critical to growth. Nothing gives you perspective than being utterly destroyed in a competition, to realizing you're not even going to get on the board, that you're going to barely qualify, and you probably won't. The fact that I can remember, like a photograph, those curtains on the side of the room with these computers, and how I was totally lost and swimming, and yet didn't want to quite admit that I was completely unqualified, tells you that this was a lesson I desperately needed and which I took to heart for the rest of my life.